Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I am joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you? How is Pretoria? How is life in general?
I must say, I think it's fine. I mean, Pretoria is fine, and life is fine. So yeah, I'm fine. You know, nothing too major to complain about, except. But, you know, I love Pretoria. I actually do like this place. So you should at some point stop hating on this place. It's not our fault we were the city.
Let it not be said that the Daily Friend does not have... Yeah, let us not be said that the Daily Friend does not have a diversity of opinion. Also, someone else with a dubious opinion about the quality of South African cities is Mr. Marius Ruert, the number one fan of the East Rand. Marius, how are you?
Nick, Herman, I just got back from foreign lands. So I was in the Western Cape for a bit, but now I'm back in Gauteng.
Welcome back to civilization. And let us get started today with our first story. And this is, I'm sure, one that, you know, those who read the title of this episode, it probably sends a little bit of a chill down their spine. And that is, there has been a complaint against Julius Malema, who of course sits on the Judicial Service Commission, which is the body responsible for choosing judges in South Africa. Malema, as part of this commission, has made several comments and questioned prospective judges quite aggressively. And this has caused a group called the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution to complain to Parliament's Registrar of Members' Interests, saying that Julius Malema has made unsubstantiated attacks on the judiciary and that he has had improper conduct on the Judicial Service Commission. Their executive secretary has asked the committee to remove Malema because it believes that he is in breach of the ethics codes and should be withdrawn as a National Assembly delegate to the JSC, the Judicial Service Commission. One of the comments that they're highlighting that Malema made is while on the Judicial Service Commission, he said the rule of law in South Africa is applied selectively and sections of the judiciary are being co-opted in this nonsensical direction. This is a comment Malema made about the judiciary without providing any evidence at the time. So the question here is, what is the EFF's game, do you think, in being, you know, so strident on the Judicial Service Commission? What are they trying to accomplish? And should Malema be serving on that commission in light of the kind of things he says to prospective judges? Herman, your thoughts?
Well, I do think that if you are going to make an allegation that the judiciary is captured or that the law is being applied unjustly by a compromised judiciary, I think you might find substantiation to back that up. Ironically, it wouldn't be in the direction of what Mr. Malema is saying. I think it might be in the exact opposite direction. But I think that doesn't matter to him. The notion of evidence-based thinking has never been, you know, something that he massively excelled at. But I do think that there's a dangerous... this South Africa's judiciary is in a dangerous position because there is substantive criticism to be leveled at it. Bad judgments do appear regularly, so do good ones, but the standard of jurisprudence in the courts isn't as high as I think it can be. And of course, then we have instances of just blatant judicial abuse, like the Hlophe saga that's been going on now for about, you know, 47 years. So the notion that South Africa's judiciary has some significant flaws is true. But the danger here is that that true criticism or that seed of truth grows into something quite dangerous, something quite vacuous, and something that is inherently threatening to liberal democracy. And Mr. Malema has been pouring all forms of racist compost onto that seed to make it grow in that terrible direction. So the judiciary has a lot of things to answer for in terms of things it does badly. Bad judgments, political judgments, independence of the judiciary, how these judges are appointed. But the sad thing is, we are in such a binary state of mind, and I think COVID and Trump highlighted that globally, but in South Africa, there's such a binary state of mind that if someone like Julius Malema says the judiciary is problematic, you either fully agree with him, in which case you have to cling to his agenda, or you disagree with him and you protect the status quo at all costs. And that's sort of a weird thing that liberals have always been trying to fight against on two fronts. Is Malema fit to be on the JSC? No, of course not. Of course not. But he's. I mean, that's not news nor a very unique or out there opinion. The question is, should he be removed? Now that's a different matter, and it's something quite dangerous. If there might be this sort of interference in parliamentary affairs, Section 178 of the Constitution sets out the composition of the JSC with the representatives from the National Assembly. Mr. Malema is procedurally, constitutionally entitled to being selected for that seat. We might have a moral, ethical debate, but I think we should be very, very careful of thinking, yet again, here's a problem, let's step in with some drastic action of law or judicial decision or some sort of action there. So we must be careful here. It's dangerous territory in all directions.
I think that's a very good point. And just before I go to you, Maurice, I just think I probably should have started with this, but Herman, could you just very briefly explain what exactly Judicial Service Commission is? Because I think sometimes the structure of our legal system can be a bit arcane to those who are not versed in the law.
Yeah, so the JSC is created in terms of Section 178 of the Constitution, and its function is essentially to serve as the selection committee for judges, and it also has this component of being required to investigate complaints about judicial officers, and it also has this advisory role where it advises the government on the health of the judiciary, the administration of the judiciary, and one might almost think of it a bit in terms of the American experience, because many people the importance that American politics and culture has in the world saw the drama that happened with the three nominations of Donald Trump to the Supreme Court, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch, and Justice Amy Coney Barrett. And where in America, the Senate Judiciary Committee is a small selection of senators that, as it were, executes the primary investigation as to the appropriateness of someone's appointment to the judiciary, and it then goes to the Senate as a whole. The JSC fulfills that appointing function in our Constitution to vet judges and then to fit for the bench or not. But I do think the JSC is a constitutional travesty. I think it is weakly structured. I think it delivers or it underdelivers on the seriousness that you really should go into the consideration of someone to become a judicial officer. And it overrepresents on, I think, petty party ideology. The American Senate isn't much better, but it takes its job much more seriously. In South Africa, we have this perverse entity that has so much power that is dominated by the government of the day. And I just think it really is one of the weakest points of our Constitution.
Yeah, I think you make some good points there. Firstly, about the dangers of messing with the constitutional, the power, the independence of Parliament. And also about the weaknesses of the JSC. So, Maurice, I want to go to you now. What are your thoughts on this? Should Malema be part of the Judicial Service Commission? Is Herman right? And what do you think the EFF's bigger game here is?
Jeez, that's going to be a tough act to follow. Feels like I'm showing, oh, shucks, here comes Untag after American Beauty's been shown or something like that. But, Herman's completely...
The good thing, Maurice, is I won't lie in the nude and just, falling in those circles. I do that in my spare time, not during working hours.
I'm very intrigued to see what the comments on YouTube are going to say after that comment by Harriman. But yeah, I mean, Harriman's spot on. And I think what it comes down to also, Julius Malema does not believe in parliamentary democracy or the institutions of South Africa. I would be, you know, I'm pretty sure he's not keen on an independent judiciary. He wants a judiciary that's ideologically aligned with him, race nationalist kind of a judiciary. Pretty sure Julius Malema would think it's fine if people like the Caligny 2, who was sent to jail and after a terrible judgment by a judge, if he, I wouldn't be surprised if he thinks it's fine if they're going to jail because they're white and, you know, that's it. So it wouldn't be worried about anything but due process or whatever the case is. And we've all seen, I mean, this all just comes from Julius Malema lets his ideology shine through with us in the recent rounds of the JSC interviews. He said, he asked David Unterhalter, who's apparently, by people who know more about this than me, one of the best legal minds in the country, asked him what business he has applying to being a judge, seeing as he's a white privileged male. And, you know, what should white males or white people in general be putting themselves forward for in any position in South African public life? And I mean, I'm pretty sure that's a view that the EFF in general holds, and Julius Malema in particular. So it's clear, as Harriman says, I don't think somebody like Julius Malema is, well, the kind of person we want, you know, helping to decide who the judges are going to be. And judges in any society are extremely important. You know, an independent judiciary is I mean, it's one of the most important cornerstones of any democratic society. And without that, and if people are getting appointed on ideological grounds rather than because people feel that they'll, or because they're going to be good judges and judge each case on its merits, but rather because they're going to tow a particular party or ideological line, then South Africa's in quite a lot of trouble, I think, and it's something we should all be concerned about.
Say something here about the judiciary in South Africa. I sort of have sympathy for the judiciary in South Africa because they have an almost impossible role. In a constitutional system like America, there seems to be stronger consensus on the possible role that a judge and the judicial bench should fulfill. And I remember last year when Trump nominated Amy Coney Barrett to serve on the judiciary, some South African liberals couldn't understand why other South African liberals like myself would be very much in favor of a judge like Coney Barrett. And the reason for that is American jurisprudence is quite well-developed constitutionally. I think it's very, very early days for the South African constitution. But in America, they have a very strong and I think at least currently probably the strongest judicial philosophy on the Supreme Court is this thing called originalism, where the role of the judge is quite restricted, quite limited. And it stems from this idea of the separation of powers. You have the popularly elected legislature to make the laws. You've got the executive, however it gets its mandate, to apply the laws and implement them. And then you've got the judiciary to measure the implementation of the laws with reference to the legal framework, the judicial framework, to see if the laws were implemented and carried out properly. And that's a very neat delineation. Making laws, applying laws, testing application. And in America, originalism is very much rooted in this, that it's not the judge's place, the judiciary's place, to make law or improve law. It is the judiciary's place to measure whether the interpretation of the law by those charged with executing it is fair and reasonable. And there's an interesting thing where the legal system then starts becoming about something that might deviate from this idea of a just judiciary, where justice is served from the judicial bench. And I have a lot of sympathy for that view, thinking that it's democratically better for the representatives of the people to pursue justice and then for the judge to be an arbiter. And in South Africa, the Constitution deliberately requires a role that is almost schizophrenic of the judiciary. They not only need to weigh the law as it is, not only do they need to look at the text and the spirit, but they have a constitutional obligation to look at the law at how it should be. They have an activist mandate, almost instructed from, I think, section 37 and 38, 39 of the Constitution. So when it is a question of what is the role of a judge in society, a good and healthy democracy should consider, is this person qualified to measure and understand the law and its application? But Mr. Malema and his allies do not do that. They can't care less about that. They care, do you look right, and are you going to be a counter-revolutionary? Those are the two questions they decide on. And the tragedy is that the JSC allows that sort of perverse thinking to be powerful. Just give me 2 seconds.
All right. So, yeah, a very interesting stuff from Homer. Let us go.
I think he's tied himself out there.
Sorry. There's a lawn being mowed just there.
So let's move on to our next story for today. And I think yesterday there were a lot of by-elections across the country. I think there were 36 or so.
40.
40.
There were 40.
In the Eastern Cape, the Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, pretty much across the board there. And it's difficult to tell entirely what the story is of these by-elections, but we can probably draw some conclusions. So I think the ANC won and retained most of the wards that it already had. The ANC took a ward off the DA. The DA lost 2 wards to the Patriotic Alliance, which is Gayton McKenzie's party, which has been very active in South Africa's coloured areas. And the ANC won a ward from the Better Residents Association, formerly known as the Bushbuck Ridge Residents Association.
The Bush what?
The Bushbuck Ridge Residents Association.
That B sound just didn't come through properly. I was like, this is an interesting color of politics that I've never seen.
So they now called themselves the Better Residents Association. So it's a little bit difficult to tell, I think, exactly what to draw from these, because the turnout was very low. Now, that's not entirely unexpected, because by-elections tend to have quite low turnout. Bit of a mixed story for the DA in some cases. Pretty bad that they've lost some wards, especially in what used to be colored strongholds of theirs. This is mostly in Joburg and Eldorado Park. One of the wards they lost, their former councillor defected to the Patriotic Alliance, and then he managed to win the ward with a very low turnout election. However, the DA does have one little bright spot, which is that one of the wards in Tshwane or Pretoria, Ward 92, they actually increased their majority in an area that is 72% black. However, the turnout was extremely low in that ward. Only 10% of voters turned out. So, Maurice, you've also looked a little bit at these numbers. What can we tell? How is the ANC doing? How is the DA doing? Should we draw too many conclusions from these results, considering how low the turnout was?
Look, these by-elections, they can definitely, they're kind of a, they can illuminate the way, but you shouldn't expect to them to be a direct map to where anything's going. They can just kind of give you indications because of this kind of low turnout, which you correctly flagged. And as you mentioned, the DA lost 3 wards where colored people make up a significant number of the people, or in fact a majority, 2 to the Patriotic Alliance and 1 to the ANC. And the ward where the DA lost the ANC, they should be very worried, because they got 51% of the vote in 2016, and they came third in that vote in that ward with only 12% coming behind the ANC first and the Patriotic Alliance second. And as we were talking before the show, you couldn't necessarily draw too much from that. But if we look at the pattern in by-elections going back over the last 2 or 3 years, the DA has been losing ground in coloured areas for some time now, and it's not just in Joburg. In Cape Town itself, it's while it's been holding on to most of its wards there, that are where it's majority coloured people, they've been losing to parties such as Good and the Cape Coloured Congress, and also in the eastern parts of that province around Nasna, George, Oudtshoorn, and those kinds of places, they've been losing to the ANC often, but also parties like Good or smaller parties like the Plaaslike Beswagte, Inwoners, and local interest parties that claim to represent coloured interests. So this is a pattern that's been going on for quite some time, and I think something that the DA definitely has to watch out for. But also perhaps it's indication of a broader trend. Perhaps we're seeing a kind of emergence of coloured identity politics in South Africa. And I think this is probably something that's going to be going on for a while. As long as South Africa is seen as a place where you get benefits from the government depending on your race, and coloured people, I mean, it's a cliche. They say they weren't white enough under apartheid and not black enough in democratic South Africa. If coloured people, whether this is true or not, feel that black people benefit from the government and they see it as a zero sum thing where black people get things and colored people don't. We'll increasingly see these colored interest groups emerge. And, it could get quite nasty. You've already seen last year and the year before people in Cape Town, like Gatfold Cape Townian, where I believe the Cape Colored Congress has emerged from, were saying things like, black people from the Eastern Cape needs to go back. The Western Cape is for colored people, which is, it's something to definitely be concerned about and to watch. And this kind of thing could, increasingly happen. And yeah, Ben, just as a final point, the ANC seems to be holding fairly steady. They've been doing pretty well. The EFF didn't really challenge them anywhere. The only place where the ANC lost was, was in Pongola. They lost the war to the IFP, which was quite something. The ANC had done pretty well in that ward before. So that's quite something. So maybe we'll also see a bit of a resurgence in the IFP, especially in northern KwaZulu-Natal. So, yeah, I think these 2021 elections scheduled for October are going to be quite interesting.
And it's worth noting that before we're recording this, the IEC is going to make some sort of announcement about the election in October. We're not quite sure what that's going to be. Herman, your thoughts on this? What do you see here? Do you agree with Maurice that we can draw these conclusions?
Yeah, when it comes to election data, it's very, very dangerous to disagree with Marius. He really keeps up to date on these things. One thing that I would just quickly say on the possible announcement of the IEC, the thing to watch out for with that, and it's odd because it was reported yesterday, but EWN, I think, that the IEC will be now making an announcement about the circumstances, whether they were conducive to hold the municipal elections in October. I think 27 October was the date promulgated by the presidency. Now, they relied on, they referenced Section 14.4 of the Electoral Commission Act. Now, Section 14.4 of the Electoral Commission Act doesn't give for the IEC the ability to make a call as to whether elections should take place. It only gives them the ability to investigate and to report on their own ability to ensure free and fair elections. Now, if the IEC is going to interpret that to mean they have the ability to weigh the influence of COVID-19 on the election, I think that would be a very, very loose and stretching interpretation of the law, because the onus, to my mind, of that piece of, or the focus of that piece of legislation is quite clear. It relates to the internal capacity of the IEC to promote free and fair elections. And I think it's quite a legal stretch to go beyond that and look at environmental or pandemic circumstances, and then through that Section 14.4, read in that the IEC has the right to measure those circumstances. But it's an interesting legal question that might develop in future. But on the broader point of what Marius says, I think he's absolutely right. It's I'm curious by, I think, the notion that, what does this portend? Now, for October, I'm very, very hesitant. I think these results don't mean much. I think turnout is the opposition always do well in, municipal elections, because it's at the big provincial and national elections that the ANC really bring out the big guns. So municipal elections are already, a distortion of perhaps the political climate broadly. And then these by-elections, so short before another municipal election, is something that further distorts it's, you know, representativity of trend or trajectory or data, because we must realize that if you were to be a voter caring about a protest vote, this is the ideal opportunity to cast that vote. Now, I'm not saying that has happened, but it contributes to my taking these results as interesting. Like Mario says, you know, they indicate some sort of direction, but I don't think they are a terribly strong, you know, GPS guiding voice to the destination that the parties are heading to in the next election, especially if it's relatively nearby in the future.
One thing I'd also like to just flag, Nick, is that if anybody ever tells you your vote doesn't count, there was a Ward 3 in Tshwane, that's Danville, where there were 1,860 votes cast and the DA beat the ANC by 3 votes. So there was a bit of skin in their teeth. And what's interesting, that an independent candidate there, somebody called Lorraine Steyn, got over 20% of the votes, and they are apparently, this woman is linked to Musima Amani's One South Africa movement. So it's obviously one tiny data point, but, you know, who knows, maybe this great independent flowering of, you know, the great flowering of independence in South African politics that Musima Amani has been pushing for. Maybe this is it. I don't think so, but who knows.
But something to keep an eye on is my Mane's movement and, of course, the June 2022 mandated revision of South Africa's electoral system. And one of the pet peeves that I've always had with the DA is it bought into, quite cynically, the notion that don't waste your vote on another party. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. It's something that has upset me ever since I was politically aware. The proportional system in South Africa, you can waste your vote in a strict constituency system in the sense that you cast your vote in a constituency where your candidate has no chance of winning. But in South Africa, at every level of elective office or election, you know, appointments and mandates, there's an influence of proportionality. So in a municipal election, in a provincial election, at a national election, there is no way for you to waste your vote unless you only take the trouble to vote on the ward thing. That doesn't apply for these by-elections because they were strictly ward elections. But the DA planted a very, very, very nasty little lie about 10 years ago that you can waste your vote in a system that has a PR element. You can't. I think it's toxic. I think it's dangerous. And it might come back to bite them in the behind.
So I think the only conclusion I think I'm willing to draw from this data and how the by-elections have been going is that the DA is definitely having problems with coloured voters. And that there are new parties emerging that seem to be capturing at least a portion of the colored vote and in some areas pretty well. I think it remains to be seen whether these successes can be replicated on a much larger scale. The Patriotic Alliance, who's now taken 3 wards from the DA across Johannesburg, has yet to prove that it can win on a very big scale in a sort of national election. It's actually stood in local government election and national election before, but basically didn't register. So this is a fairly new thing that it's kind of appeared on the radar. And we're gonna have to watch it very closely. So the same with the Cape Coloured Congress. I think they have been around before, or they're from these other movements which have, you know, have a little bit of a longer history. And their emergence now, I think, is something new that we will have to watch quite closely. Apart from that, I can even see a scenario which would be very funny. Because of how it would annoy a lot of people's narratives, that the DA may lose a small number of white votes to the Freedom Front Plus, a large number of coloured votes to these new parties, but gain black votes so that it stays about where it is, which I think the mainstream media would not be too pleased with. But anyway, who knows if that's going to happen? I think it's still a long way out from the election, and we'll have to see what happens.
How is it possible that under a white leader, South Africans, we all know, they only vote on the race of the leader. How is it possible that the DA did not? Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a discussion that we're going to come back to, because if that does happen, let's just say that there will be amusing moments. Anyway, so let me conclude there and say thank you very much for watching. We will see you next week and have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone.